This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It's World Wide Wave time, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight you've got Chris, Dean, and myself, Matt. We're taking you around the world to Africa, where we are visiting Nigeria. Nigeria has quickly accelerated in the past few months to become a black spot for LGBT rights in Africa. What drives the president to introduce some of the harshest anti-gay laws in Africa? Was the world asleep when Nigeria passed these harsh laws? And how has a cat become the centre of homophobia in Nigeria? Yes, you heard it right, a cat. We're going to explore all these and more, and to help us understand the issues in Nigeria, we speak with Monica Tabengwa. Monica is from Human Rights Watch's Africa office, and we got off the phone with her just over an hour ago, so we have the most up-to-date information for you tonight.
Joy.
Now, in Nigeria, do you think it's fun being a gay person? Perhaps not. It is illegal to be gay in Nigeria. They have sodomy laws in place, which the country has inherited from, of course, where do we think they've come from? Britain. Good old Britain have shared their laws. Ironically, they are now the ones who have achieved same-sex marriage, but the rest of the British colony behind them is well and truly behind. Slight difference, though, in the northern states where there is a Muslim majority and operates under Sharia law. So the penalty for same-sex sexual activity is death by stoning.
So recently, just this month, President Goodluck Jonathan also put in place a series of even more harsh laws to repress any same-sex groups within the country and same-sex relationships, obviously. So these new bills do things such as making it illegal to organise and operate gay clubs and organisations, and also create a penalty for being an incorrigible vagabond, which sounds fun, but it is actually defined as anyone born as a male or female dressing in clothes of the opposite sex. So I suppose that would include people who identify as trans and also people who cross-dress.
And people in the theatre, maybe? That's a fairly broad description, isn't it?
And I think one of the criticisms of these laws is that they are quite broad, and so the public would be very unsure as to what they could do within the bounds of these laws, and it looks like they will be used to enforce a huge range of activities covering LGBT people.
I suspect a lot of it has to do because Goodluck Jonathan is looking forward to a new election next year and is probably hoping to shore up his support with the traditional set.
And in fact, that's a question that we asked our guest tonight, Monica from Human Rights Watch. Now, anti-discrimination protection, there are lots of discrimination protections under Nigerian law. In fact, Nigeria signed up to a series of laws providing, general protections. But this current, this new law that has just come in, seems to fly in the face of that. So there are no specific laws to protect LGBT people, but there are provisions that cut across all citizens, with the exception of the new laws.
And one of the particularly worrying things about these laws is that Nigeria has the second largest number of people living with HIV/AIDS of any country in the world, and many people are quite concerned that these new laws will prevent people suffering from HIV/AIDS to receive health services and other things in those areas. And this is another thing we spoke about to the representative from Human Rights Watch tonight, who noted that even though there might be, for example, MSM organisations who work directly with HIV/AIDS.
Lots of NGOs who are in the field, yes.
And who were permitted to do so by government. these new laws are looking to probably stifle that.
This is Audrey Cochrane, the director of Amnesty International's Africa program on the World Wide Web.
Where tonight we are in Nigeria and exploring the very recent anti-LGBT laws that have come in the country. We spoke earlier tonight to Human Rights Watch, Monica, in their Africa office, and we started by asking why Human Rights Watch was concerned that this law could impact people beyond the LGBT community as well.
Some of the provisions of this new law basically says anyone who registers, operates or participates in gay clubs, societies and organizations would be offending this law with a possible 10-year sentence. And so that really is very broad. It would include anyone directly supporting or indirectly supporting this minority population. That would include human rights defenders, refugee organizations, healthcare providers, and anybody else who happens to work within the HIV/AIDS movement. And so, and that's not just gay people. That's just anybody who has anything or worked or says anything related to LGBT rights. That's why we're saying that it just goes beyond, you know, people who identify as lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender.
So that would also impact your ability as Human Rights Watch to work within...
Absolutely.
How do you propose to handle that?
Well, I mean, we are not going to stop working. I mean, what we'll have to do, we have to watch and see whether this law will be implemented, first of all. And if it is, we will have then to make do with working from outside, because Nigeria has no reach for people working from outside the country. You know, continue the international advocacy without necessarily risking somebody's life on the ground, and supporting the local organizations where they feel safe to advocate or to speak on behalf of their communities. And that's what we plan to do, and continue the... We have contact with lots of diplomats who have offices or consular offices in Nigeria. So we continue those kind of diplomatic talks just to impress on them to put pressure on the Nigerian government to reconsider, because this is not just about gay people. Nigeria has the highest number of people living with HIV/AIDS. And if anybody who works within this particular group, because we are talking about MSM here, and so if anybody who's working with MSM is implicated in this way, and then people might then decide to withdraw, and that has long-term impact. I'm not sure if the Nigerian government has thought beyond this. So I think that's something that we just need to point out to them, and hopefully they can listen and we can have a meaningful dialogue.
Now, the national agency in Nigeria that looks after HIV and AIDS has actually flagged the community, people who have engaged in same-sex contact, as a key group. How can the government on one hand say that they're a key group we need to look after in order to control HIV, but on the other hand outlaw being gay?
Well, I mean, I think this particular minority group or minority issue has been used by Nigeria and many other countries for their own political gain. Now, it's a very populist position, and really, people don't think about the consequences of such, whether intended or otherwise, of such a law. What they are thinking about is how many votes it's going to get for them. And we know that Goodluck Jonathan is coming up for re-election. And right now, he knows, and everybody knows, that he's lost a lot of... He's not the most popular president. Not that there have been any, really, but he's not the most popular president. And I think this is... He felt that this was one way to win his main opponents in Nigeria in both houses. And so really, it's not about LGBT people per se. It's more about political aspirations of, you know, Jonathan, as well as the movers, the main proponents of the bill themselves.
Monica, do you know if this proposed bill has widespread support either in the north of the country or in the south of the country? Or is this, as you said, more a political decision that has very low levels of community support?
Well, I mean, most of these laws really apply in the south, which is where the more common law kind of law applies. The north is usually uses Sharia law. But this is a countrywide version of that's going to be applied by both communities. The Sharia law already has, if you're found to be guilty of things that conduct, you are liable to be stoned to death. And that's not going to change. But I think the wider effects of the law, which I was describing earlier, will apply nationally. So everyone, whether you work in the northern part of Nigeria, you're in Abuja or whatever other state you're at, or you're in the south, in Lagos or other states, it would apply equally.
And that is Monica from Human Rights Watch's African office, bringing us up to date on where the LGBT rights issue is up to with these new laws that have come in. And we've got more from Monica very shortly. This issue of HIV is a very pressing and compelling issue. So the law, which pretty much says if you do anything to do with same-sex people, any sort of support, any sort of gathering that could be seen as being about anything that is same-sex related, it just can't happen. You're up for big jail time. So that is undoubtedly going to have an impact on the ability to deliver HIV services in a country with so many people who are HIV positive.
And I think one of the terrifying things about laws like this isn't even so much the enforcement as it is just the uncertainty. So if you're, if you're working for a foreign NGO and the penalty for kind of aiding some sort of same-sex related group is 10 years imprisonment, then how do you know where the boundary lies? Are you allowed to continue with work that you might have agreed on with the government to do with, to do with MSM or to do with HIV/AIDS, or is this something you need to back down from? And so I think, like Monica said, the government may not even realise the implications of that. People may voluntarily stop doing work, which desperately needs to be done, out of fear of what will happen to them.
Or even the NGO might say, look, we've got to look after our staff. We've sent them across there. You need to only deliver these certain services and stop with things like HIV education or prevention.
Which would be a really tragic outcome, prioritising other countries in the region when Nigeria clearly needs assistance with HIV/AIDS programs in particular.
Mm. We mentioned before that the vagueness around this law, the interpretations, the definitions are very open. The law specifically mentions same-sex marriage and civil unions. Now, in Australia, that's a fairly, people, if you say that, people have got a fairly good idea of what that means. There's some sort of ceremony, there's signing a piece of paper. In Nigeria, it is so broadly defined that it could include any form of same-sex cohabitation. You and your flatmate sharing a place, two straight men or straight women living together could be deemed as being in a civil union under this current law.
It sounds as though the idea is that the law is so broad that they can use it for pretty much anything they want.
And it sounds like in a country that has issues with police corruption and corruption from the authorities, this is exactly how it will be implemented as well.
And the law we touched on there in the interview, the North and South divide. The South is Christian dominated, the North is Muslim dominated. A story just from the last week where a Muslim man in the North received 20 lashes after breaking anti-gay laws. Now, this dates back 7 years, so he waited 7 years to get his lashes, but there seems, because of the law that has been brought in by the president, it has, raised the profile of this issue and made it much more concerning.
And already reports are coming out of, for example, 10 days ago, 30 people who the government suspected to be gay have been rounded up and arrested. But unfortunately, the way things go there is that, you know, people haven't been charged with anything. And so there is this climate of fear, people not knowing what they have been arrested for or whether they or their families will be next.
And clearly this law has come in very quickly, very rushed. So Nigeria has signed up to, it's got some, it guarantees rights for individuals, things like the freedom of assembly under not only their own constitution, but the African Charter for Human and People's Rights. So there's this wealth of rights that should be available, but in one foul swoop, under the president, they have just swept this away and decided that, no, there's this special subset of gay people. The fact that there are so many holes and such a broad law, it obviously seems to be, you know, something that has just rushed through.
And I think international politicians have expressed concerns, and I think these are directed more at the Nigerian public, saying, well, you know, if this is one set of laws that has now been brought in, then one set of people in your country who can no longer access their basic human rights, then, you know, who falls next? And I think that's a great fear, because this is a country with, you know, 500 odd ethnic groups. It's incredibly diverse, it's incredibly rich, but for that reason as well, I think could be subject to some very discriminatory laws as well.
Ah, the R word. And I think, Chris, you've actually touched on the main motivation behind these laws, that the country has a population of 160 million people. It's actually fabulously wealthy, unlike many other countries in Africa that we might know of, and is one of the countries, the acronym is MINT. So it's a country that is one of four countries that could become a superpower if it was a bit more organised. The other ones being Mexico, Indonesia and Turkey. So there's plenty of money to go around. They're an oil-producing country. So we think...
I'm surprised America hasn't had a bigger interest in this area then.
Well, I suspect it's only a matter of time. Look, that leads me to speculate that could it be that the motivation behind this law is that the law itself doesn't require spending any money and is going to distract the populace from the fact that they've got pots of money, or the country has pots of money, but they're not actually getting any of it. And I suspect that's really what a lot of it is about.
And looking to the Australian case we were talking before off air, that, you know, when we're not...
Are there mirrors? Are there...
Yeah, incredibly divisive policies distracting from legitimate things that people should be concerned about.
This is Otton Batar from LGBT Centre of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on Worldwide Wave.
Indeed, this is the Worldwide Wave, and tonight we are visiting Nigeria. But before we go back to another interview with Monica of Human Rights Watch, just wanted to do a shout out to Otto and our friends. Who you just heard, exactly, and our friends at the LGBT Centre of Mongolia who are streaming us online.
Now, Otto was our guest last week, bringing us incredible insights into LGBT issues in Mongolia. And in fact, he said he's going to listen in regularly. So hello, Otto. Lovely to have you with us. And another shout out here too for Pride March Victoria. You heard in the ad break there, it's on this weekend from 2 p.m. at St Kilda, the walk down to Katani Gardens. You can join AFL footballers Brock McLean, Dan Jackson with Jason Ball, who's a very big advocate for and the first openly gay Victorian footballer. 120 community organisations and crowds galore, followed by, of course, the obligatory after party. And if you can't get down there, tune in to Joy. We'll have all the highlights here for you live on the day. And the reason we want to highlight that is because where we are tonight in Nigeria is not a place where you can have a pride march. We've been speaking with Monica Tabengwa from Human Rights Watch Africa office, and we wanted to explore a bit more with Monica what the level of public support for these laws is and what the influence of the church is.
Joy.
There does seem to be a lot of public support for these laws, and there have been reports of the churches encouraging the laws and even perhaps incentivizing violence against LGBT people. Is that the feel that you're getting?
Yeah. On the ground, there is a lot of support. Evangelism has taken root in Nigeria. And then, of course, you already have Islamic fundamentalism. So both of these have huge impact on how people react to what they call un-African or against their own religion or Christian beliefs or Islamic beliefs. So there is that big sentiment. But at the end of the day, I mean, our position is this, that no matter how small a minority, it has to be protected. Human rights is about making sure that every individual has the right to equal protection of the law. And this particular bill of law takes away that kind of protection that everybody is entitled to. So notwithstanding the popular support, human rights dictate that minorities must be supported even more because they are vulnerable to the majority.
One of the other risks in this law, even if it is not implemented fully, there is a risk of corruption. Nigeria is notoriously corrupt. Do you fear that police and the like will use it as a tool for blackmail and corruption?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, even before this started, we already had reports about people being extorted by police, by other government officials, particularly MSM. And so now it's even, you know, people feel that they are justified or they're given that justification by the existence of such a law, more so because it's so vague and very large, and it doesn't really define straight away what, for instance, what a gay meeting is. You know, is it just because you're sitting and discussing possibility of, you know, MSM that this is a gay meeting? So that, it gives people room to misinterpret. And with an already corrupt system, it's going to get worse. It's very likely to get worse. It will get worse. That we expect to hear more of these reports coming out of Nigeria.
Monica, are there any LGBT human rights groups that are working on the ground in country, or is it mainly organisations working from other areas because it's quite dangerous?
Well, there are many organisations working in country. There are quite a few. There is a whole group of Nigerian organizations that have been working in both in the states of the north and the south. But since the passing of this law, all of them have really, really cut down on how much publicity they are going to allow themselves. So they are going to sit and watch and see whether the government or, you know, law enforcers will come after them for their existence, one, and secondly, for the work that they will continue doing. So for now, I think there's going to be really, they're going to be quiet, but they have been doing some work, particularly around MSM, and then you have a few others that do the whole LGBT.
Monica, this law seemed to go through with little notice on the international stage until it was too late. Do you think the international community was too preoccupied with other countries such as Russia and Uganda to notice what was going on in Nigeria?
No, I don't think so. I think everybody was blindsided. Even the local organisation had no idea. When the news broke out, we immediately contacted people in Nigeria, and they had no idea. And they had to run and scramble, and finally, after a day, where they were able to get reliable information. So it would seem it was deliberate in the way that the president acted. Much as they have done, I think the House of Representatives, when they signed it, again, there was no debate, there was not much publicity. There was no. Usually, you get a white paper being published to show which bills will be discussed in advance, and that didn't happen. And so, really, there was no way we could have known unless we were sitting in Parliament every day and monitoring that, which it's impossible to do. I don't think we were preoccupied. Well, we are preoccupied, but I don't think that affected, you know, what happened in Nigeria.
Monica Tabengwa from Human Rights Watch in Africa, thank you very much for joining us on Joy 94.9. And you heard the voice there of Monica from Human Rights Watch. Talking about Nigeria, this international issue, the exposure. There seems to the I was sort of asking the question there, you know, this has, everyone seems to have come to the party quite late, but Monica putting that this might be a political device that the president has, you know, thrown in this law to perhaps deflect from something else, but certainly thrown it in order not to get attention, at least until it became law.
Well, apparently Nigeria has the second highest number of people in the world with HIV. So I suspect that might be a little bit behind it, because they'd rather spend the money on this new law than actually spending money on their own people.
Now, the US has come out since this law became in force and said they will absolutely not be cutting funding for AIDS to Nigeria. They're basically saying that they were... Well, one of the comments made was that they were quite concerned about the loss of freedoms, democratic freedoms, the freedom of assembly, the freedom of expression. But they said that, as you know, we put millions of dollars into the fight against HIV and AIDS, and whilst they are not a lawyer, they may need to look at what the law is and look at what restrictions will be in place and what they can therefore do to keep up the fight for HIV and AIDS in the country.
And similarly, it looks like international pressure doesn't seem to be coming from the UK side either, with David Cameron still saying that he will increase aid to Nigeria. And people seem to think this is because a few months earlier when he had made... I think in 2011 when David Cameron had made comments saying that aid would be adjusted accordingly depending on countries introducing repressive LGBT laws, there were accusations from the African community and African politicians saying that this was kind of the new colonial imposition of, you know, of Western morals on the continent of Africa. And so he backed right off that.
Prime Minister Cameron would appear to agree, given that he's increased aid from £200 million to £270 million. So,
The voices of dissent, though, are coming from everywhere. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has also spoken out against the laws. And, in fact, UN AIDS and the Global Fund have also noted the risks involved in obstructing the response to HIV AIDS in Africa. So pretty much the world's coming out and saying, hey, this is not a good law.
Now we just have to see if that comes to anything, I suppose.
We did also touch on this, the influence of the church, so more so the Christian churches of the South. And there have been some reports. In fact, just yesterday, a report came in off the wires, so to speak, about churches fanning violence and encouraging mob justice against LGBT people and saying these laws are good.
And unfortunately, this seems to be the trend, not just in Nigeria, but also in countries such as Uganda, where people seem to think that fundamental Christian groups, often sponsored by other countries, including Western countries, are the ones fanning the flames, as you put it.
Every Christian in Nigeria is happy about the development, especially when he did that contrary to the pressure of the Western world. In fact, that's a quote from an Anglican bishop in Nigeria.
Very concerning.
And look, even pets are not out of the firing line. We did say at the top of the show that there was a pussycat at the centre of this this new law in Nigeria. A middle-aged woman who has tried to keep her name public publicly disowned her cat, with whom she had kept as a pet for 7 years, because of what she deemed an unnatural sexual behaviour.
Now, I saw this article yesterday. I wasn't sure whether it was a hoax or not. The people who published it seemed to think it wasn't, and there's nothing on Snopes or any of those myth-busting websites yet.
And it sounds like, in the context of the laws and all the things that are going on there, it sounds like it's possible.
It could be possible. And just to make sure, the media source that we got this article off does have a picture of a cat with very big, sad eyes, but notes underneath, as you would with humans, that this is a random picture of a cat, yeah, and not the cat associated with the incident.
And it did come from, you know, what appears to be a reputable source within Nigeria's media. So, yeah, maybe.
What gives me pause is it says the cat...
Pause.
I'm here all night, folks. The cat named Bull was alleged to be in the habit of making sexual advances only to other male cats in the house, even though there are several other female cats. Now, this lady has...
They just
only...
might be more fun.
No, no, I think the point here... Let's read between the lines. This lady here has Baloo as our sort of cat who should become our new Joy mascot, and also has several other cats of each sex living in the same house. I'm just going to say it, crazy cat lady. So she's got quite a few cats, and this one, unfortunately, Bull has apparently jumped the fence, and now she is, let's see.
She went out and put up notices saying, anybody interested in this gay cat can have it because I have no further use for it.
And the cat's renunciation has attracted members of the public. It's dramatic, however, but no one wants to take ownership of such a cat. And we can probably blame President Goodluck Jonathan for that and his new laws. Otherwise, people would be eager to have a gay cat.
Oh, there are so many members of the lesbian community in Melbourne who would grant cat asylum to this cat, if that were a thing.
I expect that the phone's going to be ringing hot any second now. So.
You are on the World Wide Wave, where we're exploring Nigeria on Joy 94.9.
From Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
It's a worldwide wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, where tonight we've been exploring Nigeria. Time to look a bit broader now as we head into Worldwide Wrap. We look at the stories around the globe that have been hitting the LGBT news.
So what seems like a bit of I was going to say a blessing in disguise. I think it's probably a curse in disguise. A bill is being submitted in Russia in relation to the anti-gay propaganda law, so that if this proposition was passed into law, it would ban sexual relations, the promotion of sexual relations of any kind to children. So the current laws, as we know them, are called the gay propaganda laws because they prevent people from, for example, from advocating LGBT rights around a schoolyard. But the person who's brought these proposed changes said that this would change the wording of the law from non-traditional sexual relations to just propaganda on any sexual relations. And while this sounds kind of very general and nice, activists in the country have said that the laws in legal practice would still be directed at LGBT people. But what it would mean is that if Russia was brought before one of the, for example, courts of human rights in the world, then no specific law in particular would be able to be pointed to. So it doesn't look like a great...
Yeah. I think this is a bit of a PR story. By changing the law, removing the word gay doesn't mean they're going to stop persecuting people. If you tell a youth about sex, i.e. sex education, you know, are they really going to haul them over the coals?
Unlikely, it seems.
Nyet. What have you got, Dean?
Well, on a happier note, there's a report, a new Australian government report conducted by the Australian Institute of Family Studies, and it's shown that children raised in same-sex families are doing as well, if not better, than those from heterosexual families. This will probably shock none of our Joy listeners, but they've conducted a comprehensive review of gay
parenting.
They're
a smart lot, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. We love each and every one of them. Let's see. We've conducted a comprehensive review of gay parenting and discovered children raised by same-sex couples have the same outcomes as other children and in some regards benefit from high-quality parenting. So according to the report on measures of general health and family cohesion, children aged 5 to 17 years with same-sex attracted parents had significantly better scores when compared to Australian children from all other backgrounds and family contexts. Let's see that make a difference to the current laws in Australia.
Now, Christopher Pine, the Education Minister, I wonder if he's a regular listener to our show. If you are, Christopher, send us a message on 0427 Joy 949. But that's some pretty strong evidence there.
If we got a text from Christopher Pine, that would just make my week. Can someone text us in pretending to be him, please?
Now, Coca-Cola are in the firing line. They have had, in Australia, you might remember they had the campaign called Share a Coke, where you could, you know, go onto a website and type in your name or whatever and get it printed on the side of a Coke can. Well, with their sponsorship of the Sochi Olympics, they've had this campaign running in South Africa, and the bright people of South Africa have been going on and making up all sorts of funny and interesting things on the sides of Coke cans, like instead of a name, putting the word homophobia. Now, Coca-Cola has responded by banning certain words, including the word gay. So you can type in the word gay and it says, oh, I think you might have wanted to put something else. But if you put the word straight in, that's quite okay.
Oh, so all of those lovely individuals in their 50s who were called gay in the time when that was a very fashionable name would be
true.
Very, very sad.
Wouldn't you think they would have thought of that beforehand? There's a very famous incident that happened with Nike a few years ago where you could actually have a word printed on the sole of a shoe. And there's a very interesting article, I'm sure a Google search will bring it up, where someone tried to have the word sweatshop printed on the on their actual Nike sneaker. And try as they might, and it went on for quite a long time, they couldn't get it to happen. So, and because it was one of the built-in words, and Nike was smart enough to know that that was perhaps not something they wanted on their actual products. So you would think that Coke would have figured this out before they even put it.
It's the new world of social media. But staying on the Sochi theme, the mayor of Sochi, where the Winter Olympics start in just over a week, has come out and said there are no gays in his village. 350,000 people, he says there are no gays, but they would be welcome as long as they respected Russia's ban on homosexual propaganda.
And he knows because he's thoroughly inspected each and every one of them personally.
It is certainly a worry.
Hi, this is Max from Amnesty International speaking from Ukraine on the World Wide Web.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time, where tonight we had stopped off in Africa and getting an insight into the recent laws in Nigeria. A huge thank you to Monica Tabengwa from Human Rights Watch's Africa Office. Also, Facebook, our Facebook page has been going off this week with lots of comments and likes. So to Liao, Mark, Jan and all the others who posted and made mention, thanks for being a part of our Facebook page. You can catch all of our shows online again at our webpage, joy.org.au/worldwidewave. And we'll be back next week with more countries on the World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.